Temporary.
Right, okay. Let me just make the, this is session six of the oral history interview with Fred Miller. It's being conducted on March 31st, 1994 at his offices at the World Trade Center. Right.
Okay.
All right. So we're finally coming to your last, so far, your last episode with government, and it's now the tenure of Barbara Roberts. I wanted to talk about her initial decision to run and how what was the reaction to that?
Of course, I wasn't on her decision-making side then, but it was very soon after Neil said he was withdrawing. And I remember Neil coming in and saying, call people together, let them know I'm not going to run. And it was, I think, before 8 on a who knows which morning, but let's say it was a Tuesday morning. So he'd done some thinking, and I think over the weekend had decided maybe it was a Monday morning. In any case, then, this was, if you remember the month, February, anyway, somewhere around then, and obviously there had been lots of campaign discussions with Frohnmayer versus Goldschmidt, and campaigns were underway. So when he made that announcement, obviously it was very big news, and it was something like the next day that Barbara declared. This, of course, she was Secretary of State. She obviously wanted to do it, or she wouldn't have made that decision. So if there's anything unique about the decision, and probably some things that bothered some of Neil's insiders, it was the rapidity with which she entered the race. But from her point of view, you don't want someone else to get in. And if you're the Secretary of State and you want to run, you say it right away, and it clears the field. Otherwise, there may have been another two or three people interested.
One of the problems with the short time into, you know, left, really, to get together a campaign, do you think that would have been a factor to
on
get,
how fast get, to get
you know,
in?
Get rolling?
Oh, sure. But I think she just had to make a decision. My sense was that the decision was more one of, I'm in a position to do it. I had planned to run for governor at some time, in Barbara's mind. This time opens up, I'm there.
And you think then that she probably had thoughts in the future?
Oh, sure.
She
said that before.
Okay. So I had wondered if the fact that Goldschmidt had decided not to run sort of presented a possibility that she really hadn't expected, and that...
Oh, I think that's right.
But it brought, oh, well, maybe this is, I'm the one to fill the void.
I think in a fairly short time she had to make that decision, because otherwise the calculation would have been, now when is Neil's term up, and let's see, Neil runs and wins, and there's another 4 years. It's a lot different calculation. And then you have to think about when your Secretary of State term expires. It just happened, there it was. And so once you hear it, she was pretty decisive.
So some of the Goldschmidt people were sort of surprised with
I think they were. I think because there's something akin to mourning that goes on when the existing governor decides not to run. I've seen the same thing when Barbara decided not to run. That takes place especially in the governor's staff, but there are a lot of people within government who have identified with the person or the style. So it's a little bit of a shock when people are in this kind of mourning, and all of a sudden someone says, okay, I am the new candidate. And I think there's little reaction to that.
What did people consider her chances in the beginning?
I'm not sure. I think that if you sized it up early on, people would have said it was an uphill battle. And people were saying that Neil had somewhat of a battle, because governors create records and get people on both sides of them. And it depends a little bit on where the economy is or how things are going. But there were some people who thought that Dave Frohnmayer was going to make it very difficult for Neil. So and when Barbara stepped in, I think the general feeling was it's an uphill battle.
How well known was she in the state at that point?
I'd say pretty well known. As Secretary of State, you're pretty well known. And she had been a majority leader in the House and Multnomah County Commissioner, so she'd been around a long time.
And so her campaign was, do the people in government, the Goldschmidt people, get involved in the campaign?
People in government usually don't get involved in campaigns, and that's partially because of use of tax money. You're very careful when you're working in government not to participate, at least in Oregon. I think some other areas are more likely. And also, a lot of the agency heads tend not to be changed in Oregon when a new governor comes in. So there's not a real high percentage to say, let's get on board on this with this governor, and even in our spare time. There's a heavy dose of neutrality that takes place. In a governor's office, there's a little more flexibility because there's more of a direct relationship to the governor. And so some of the people within a governor's staff may have gotten involved, but again, a lot of people have a loyalty to the existing governor. As I say, I think people were a little bit taken aback at Barbara stepping in so fast.
How did Goldschmidt react to her?
They were friendly and had... I think Neil had lots of respect for her just in terms of being a tough person who would take stands, and he obviously appreciated that about other politicians. I never talked to him about how fast she got in and his reaction to that. I never think, even with the best of intentions, that governors use Secretary of States as well or as often as they might, because Secretaries of State, realizing they're next in line, always want a little more of a briefing and familiarity with the issues, and it's just hard to keep that going, especially if they're from different parties. Obviously, that wasn't their case. So I don't know. I think he chose not to run because he had lots of other things on his mind and pressures, and I think those tended to occupy him more than worrying about where Barbara was.
I moved here mm-hmm. during the summer of the campaign,
mm-hmm.
and I knew that the governor was not running for re-election, but He was very low key that summer. I rarely saw him on the news, or I knew very, mm-hmm. very little about him and knew a great deal about the campaign. Is that what was I,
well, I think see, you're
observing
right.
the right way?
And people tend to pay attention to what's going to happen next rather than what's there. And that generates a little conflict because governors think of themselves as governors.
Yeah.
And yet the attention tends to turn to who's next. And even within the state government ranks, you're a little more concerned about who may be there for the next 4 years rather than the next 4 months.
Well, when I went back and worked on the papers for Governor Goldschmidt, it surprised me how many things were still going on.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of work still being done. And he was very busy as a governor, even with conferences and meetings and getting together.
I think he has such a capacity to do lots mm-hmm. of things at one time that you wouldn't expect that to fall off
right.
tremendously. But I think there's a little less sense of needing to create an image or publicity when you're doing things when you're not running again. You don't have to think about how it impacts your election.
When I worked on the papers, there's a great big set of folders, the transition papers, that were turned over
mm-hmm.
to Barbara, and it was very much, you know, an overview of what's been done and what's still, you know, sort of getting them up to speed. That seemed to me to be different than the transition papers from when he came in to office, what was there. Did you feel, you observed then two transitions.
Right, but they have a little different role on the transition. I didn't really get involved in the office, given that I was out in a different building and looking at operations of government rather than the real governor's office mm-hmm. transition. But I do remember their comments about getting very little from the previous mm-hmm. administration and trying to make up for that. There was an effort on Neil's part to say, I want to make sure I leave things behind and leave something better than I received.
Do you think, especially since his successor was of his same party,
I'm sure that makes a difference.
That spurs the governor on to?
I think, but I tended to think just in terms of the office that he wanted that to happen. Yeah, people remember others and remember administrations for different things, and you can do lots of things right, and then if the transition is a little bit awkward, you can lose some of the benefits.
So this was a smooth type of transition.
I don't know that new people coming in ever pay enough attention to just what was there, because usually you think there are new ideas and new approaches, but it was smoother. I think there's more information there.
Well, did you take a role in her transition at all?
I did. Because she had some transition teams. Neil had established that by bringing people from outside government in to talk about different issue areas. So I became involved in that.
And what was your role in that Do you remember?
I'm not sure how to characterize that. I would participate in lots of the meetings. John Kaiser was the transition director, although Patricia McCaig took an increasing role, given that she had run the campaign and then was to become the chief of staff. And at that time, they were trying to think through roles for people, mine included. But I was sort of the repository of knowledge on state government, so I had a value to add at that stage. So I'd sit around on decision-making, and that's the first time I had met Patricia, and I had dealt with Barbara before. But Patricia and I had a lot of work to do together, and the relationship worked well. So I got very involved there and probably giving advice outside of my area.
But often trying to give the knowledge of what how policies would impact the way state government ran, or how to streamline state government, or
all of the above. When you get outside groups talking about government and getting task forces in natural resources or government operations, there are a lot of people outside government who are not really experts, but perhaps think they have a great idea that hasn't been tried, and I'd have a sense on whether it had been tried or whether it was on point or not. And it's, if you think about it, if you're talking about how should government operate, you know that the unions, for example, who always want to have the frontline people more involved in decisions, are going to say one of the problems with government is frontline people aren't involved in decisions. Well, then the transition team announces this as a great finding, and it is a case that some things need to be done better there, but a lot of times the people directly involved understand that, and understand that maybe some of the points being made are collective bargaining points rather than operations points. So I had spent more time around government than other people there, so I had a chance to add some comments.
Now, almost overshadowing her election was the question of Measure 5. And so how did that, right from the transition, was that something that people were having to address?
Yes. Let me go back a little ways. I think around August or thereabouts, people thought the governor was going to lose. That is, Governor Roberts would lose the election. They didn't have as much, it just took a while to get the campaign going. Didn't have a great deal of money. Dave Frohnmayer had some momentum. And somewhere along there, Patricia and Barbara made the decision to spend just about all their campaign funds in August to bolster her role, or bolster her standing, which then would allow them to generate more money. And it turns out that was a very good approach, because it did rate the advertising that she did at this unusual time, raised her popularity, did generate some funding, and probably turned the election around. Had they waited until the normal times and saying, let's have whatever kind of blitz in October, I think they may not have made it. And obviously Al Mobley's role, a third party entering, made a difference. So the attention was focused more on the governor's race, ballot measure 5. Didn't get a lot of discussion outside of there was a little bit of gloom and doom, if this passes, what will happen? When it did pass, it became pretty important. And I was involved in preparing at least the Goldschmidt budget, what he would have done had he been governor, knowing, of course, that he wouldn't be, but giving a base to then for new governor to prepare. So ballot measure 5 was a strong signal about reductions that needed to be made. And it turns out they weren't as great as first feared, at least in the first year. But that did start to dominate thinking.
But not quite as much in the transition time.
Oh, the transition time, it was very important because there are cuts that had to be made. And Governor Roberts had spent her time in the Democratic leadership role. And people simplistically talk about tax and spend, but she had a real interest in education, human resources, in areas where the general fund is spent. And I think, ideally, she would have come in and been a real human resources governor. And yet what she inherited was a deck that said cut those programs, because that is where the general fund goes. It's really higher ed or human resources or education or public safety is 90% of it. So the very programs that she had a great deal of fondness for were the ones that had to be reduced. And that was hard. In the transition, it got down to how do we make cuts in education, for example. And she had spent her career trying to build the strength of education.
As she was running, what were the big themes that she had? Or is there a phrase that people identify with her campaign, like the Oregon comeback with Goldschmidt? Or?
I'm trying to think of it, and I don't know if I was focused so much on that. It doesn't jump out at me, and somebody could give you a better answer, obviously, mm-hmm. but I don't think of an economic comeback or children's agenda or whatever. She was kind of, there was more of a style question. She was coming across as a tough campaigner, one who deals well with people, who will give straight answers. If there was a theme, it was something along the line of give, you know, tough decisions, straight answers.
As an observer of that election, what, and not really having known either of the candidates at all, what always impressed me and surprised me some was how very verbal she mm-hmm. was, how she was so able to communicate closely to the people. And Frohnmayer, who is, I would think, a very brilliant man, did not communicate his message. Mm-hmm. There wasn't a warmth to him, or he didn't even speak as effectively.
Yeah, for whatever reason, that's how it, he comes across, and I think there's not much he can do about that. And I can identify with that. In fact, my wife, who's now running for the legislature, is very much like Barbara in terms of being verbal, mm-hmm. liking people, mixing with mm-hmm. crowds. And I'm a lot more like Dave Frohnmayer. And I can think that I'm warm and friendly, and it can come across as, I mean, my wife could beat me every time, and Barbara, I think, could beat Dave lots of times. Even though Dave was very smart, mm-hmm. knew the programs, very nice person, sensitive person.
And I think that's he has had, in his own life, a great deal of sorrows and
yeah.
hard things with his daughter that was mm-hmm. so sick, and sympathetic to people in that. So they both had backgrounds that prepared them to be empathetic with other people,
yeah.
and I think they both are, but it didn't come across as much.
No doubt.
And yeah. I think, to me, as an observer, it seemed that was what sold Barbara Roberts, as opposed to an idea to...
That's right. I think it was a style question. And the thought of being both warm and friendly and understanding and sort of tough and straight-spoken
mm-hmm. right.
Was a nice combination.
Right.
Now, I don't know if it was nice enough to get 50% of the vote. It would be interesting if Al Mobley wouldn't have been in the race, how it would have come out. And I think some analysis would say she would have won anyway, and I don't know how that analysis was done. But at least it would have been more questionable.
But it does make, after she's elected, some problems in that how far can you go on being, having, a warm, a kind manner?
Well,
if it's not, if the people don't know what's behind it.
Well, it's a good point. And you can be warm and kind and have great support out of your usual constituents in human resources and education. And then the first thing you do a couple months later is reduce and cut the programs. And it was people take a long time to understand the fiscal realities.
Mm-hmm.
And for her to say she needs to cut children's services or mental health or education, and the constituents who have supported her and were her friends saying, how can you do that? Mm-hmm. Cut somewhere else. But really, there's nowhere else to cut, General Fund. And so she had to get in there early and not make enemies of her friends, but at least have her friends question why she was doing that. And then at that time, she commented, because it wasn't comfortable for her, she made a classic remark as we were doing editorial board briefings, that people will die as a result of this budget. And what she had in mind is that there were nursing homes, for example, that no longer could take constituents. And factually, she was probably accurate that as a result of the budget that there would be fewer services offered to some kids, some people in mental health institutions, seniors, and there probably would be people who died as a result. But the next day in the Register Guard, I remember there was a file picture that showed Barbara smiling, and then the quote under it was, "People will die." And people didn't picture the photographs. I mean, that didn't get spread around so much, but that comment on "people will die" stuck with her. And it came across as sort of a negative hype on ballot measure 5, and all the sort of animosity that surrounded government and ballot measure 5 got focused on, here's the new governor saying people will die, and it's really not so bad, it's just minor cuts. And then it turns out the general fund, that there's a new forecast in May, it went up. And that wasn't anybody's fault. The economy the economy did it. But it meant that the problem was not so great as when she put the budget together. And the Oregonians who wanted to say, this isn't so bad, quit screaming, quit whining, were able to say, see, it wasn't so bad, even though Barbara made the right decisions at the time she had to make them.
Now, one of the things she had to do that I would think affected you directly was her decision to reduce the 4,000 state workers, is that?
That was a while later.
Okay. Were you still there at that point?
Yes.
When that?
Yes.
And how did that?
It seems to me that it's hard to remember years in chronology, but if that was about 1 year into it, 2 years into it.
Maybe 1 year.
1 year into it, and she did that in her State of the State.
Okay,
she commented that she'd reduced 4,000, and I was involved in that, and I was the one who really had responsibility for implementing it. That, again, ended up being a loser from a credibility point of view, and that's almost worth talking about in itself. There's a reason to get to 4,000. It was a little higher than I might have chosen, although I think she probably gave me credit for the choice. But there was a thought of the cynicism about government and things really weren't being reduced, and the real focus on number of employees. And there were a fair number of vacancies, as well as our thought that we could reduce the layers of administration. So there's some strong signals in terms of reductions that needed to take place. The frustration is that most of government is not general fund, but that's where the focus is. And so when you say, let's reduce the transportation department, which is funded primarily by gas taxes and weight mile taxes, someone say, why do you want to do that? It doesn't do a bit of good to fill the gap of the general fund because it's constitutionally dedicated to highways. But if you don't reduce those departments, most of government will be going on as business as usual. Well, the general fund is reduced considerably, and the detractors from government will say it hasn't changed. But when you do it, those constituents of those programs saying, why are you doing it? This is just for image. And so we tried to strike a balance on the positions to say it didn't matter whether you're general funded or not, you still had to make administrative cuts. But also, the general fund agencies had to make some program cuts because we knew that we were coming closer to a cliff as we'd implement ballot measure 5, and we had to start what we called a glide slope to get there rather than just fall off the cliff at the end of the biennium. So we were on route and had lots of meetings aimed at reducing the 4,000. We had the numbers laid out in a scorecard going about the reductions. But that wasn't 4,000 people, it was positions. And we thought it might result in a layoff of 800 to 1,000 people.
Because some of them would be retirements that were filled?
Well, some would be retirements. Some would be vacant positions that didn't have anyone in them, and you just take them back from the executive department point of view. But some of them would actually have people in them. But again, sometimes people try hard not to understand that on the outside, because she was faulted for not firing 4,000 people. She never said that. She said 4,000 positions. But nevertheless, the detractors would say, oh, come on, they're just vacant positions. Well, that still means money savings. They were funded. You do save the money. But there was some credibility lost there. And then before it was all implemented, it would have had to be done in the budget just before I left. There was maybe a decision or a series of decisions, or the person who took my place thought it wasn't quite so important, but they didn't make the 4,000. And that got a lot of negative press.
So they've never really been eliminated either, some of them?
No, I don't know how many were reduced. I never did see the final tally. It might have been 2,700 or something like that. But it came out different than what her statements were at the State of the State.
Well, when she, we'll come back. I haven't quite gone in the right order here. Well, as she was coming to grips with Measure 5, is that what prompted her to do her talks with Oregonians, to play off of her strong suit, which is the warmth that she has as a person?
Well,
what prompted that?
The conversation.
Right, is that what it was called, the conversation?
We did. Really, there was a strategy saying we put put the budget together for the first step on ballot measure 5, which wasn't catastrophic, but had some, and it got bailed out, as I say, by revenue that went up a little bit. But we figured that something had to be done in terms of new tax revenue, because the next step, and you could tell by the measure that what was going to have to be reduced on the next step. So if it was going to be something closer to a 15% reduction in programs, there had to be lots of preparation. People needed to understand it. So we set about doing three different things. One of them was the governor's conversation with Oregonians, which we can talk about. On the next level down, we had something called program review, where we had local government people, private sector people, and other state agency people looking at all of the programs and basically saying, if you had to reduce 20 or 25%, how would you do it? And then we had a governor's task force, mostly private sector. I chaired it as a non-voting member, that was to look at the efficiencies and operations of government and make recommendations. So as a matter of looking at programs, looking at operations, and the governor having a conversation, and the conversation was aimed at both getting people's opinions, views on how things were going, but as important, it was aimed at educating, because there's really a low level of understanding of public finance, and it makes it real easy for the cynics to say, there they go again, or government's too inefficient, without knowing very much about it, and people nod their head, that's right, but somehow or other, there has to be more education, and that was the governor's effort at doing it.
Was she successful?
No.
Why was that?
I think, for one, it's a massive task, and she did this through the EdNet system, right, where she did something like 30 closed-circuit TV broadcasts with people all around the state. But if you do that, even with 30 of them and all around the state, you just don't hit enough people. And she hit 10,000-plus people in the process, which is a big number and a big undertaking. And let's say, even if she convinced all of them, which she didn't, it still doesn't change the majority of Oregonians' minds. So while it was a good process, again, there were detractors. Who gets invited, and do they really get the straight story? Turns out she's very good at explaining fiscal things and was very good on those programs. But it didn't educate enough people. And then in the discussions afterwards, frequently there would be some cynic about, yeah, but government isn't efficient enough, and why do anything for... And she didn't build this as a new taxation approach. It was a matter of, you need to understand the trade-offs, hopefully with the thought that ultimately there would be some kind of support for some new tax, so the reductions wouldn't have to be made. But that wasn't the mission of the conversation. In any case, usually in the discussion afterwards, there would be detractors, and frequently they'd be from government. And that's what, that aggravated me, because we'd get to a point of saying, very close at the end to talking about, isn't very good in government, we're upset, and someone from government standing up saying, oh, it's worse than that. You know, I worked for government for 14 years and didn't really work for 11 of them or whatever. And that just added credibility to the cynics, I think.
Was an aspect of her conversation to learn from the voters how they wanted Measure 5 implemented?
Oh, I don't know about that. It was a matter of educating as well as getting the public's views on where things were going. I don't know if it was really a matter of how it was implemented. That's maybe more specific than what she was after. But at least theoretically what was to happen was that people would be educated, we'd get some sense about where people were, and then simultaneously we would have got some ideas on cutting government through the task force we mentioned, and how we could reduce programs just generally in the program review, and all this could come together as a package to say, here's now what we're going to do with government, and here's how we're going to implement, and now if we need more taxes because we know what programs we have to be cut, maybe we don't want to cut them all, we could have a tax measure. Now theoretically, those of us on the inside would have thought the numbers would say we'd better do something. Practically, it didn't work that way, and the governor, of course, tried in a special session to get a tax measure out and didn't. So that process sort of culminated in a special session that didn't work.
We'll talk about the special session
okay.
in a little bit. The choice to use the EdNet as for these conversations, why was that choice made?
Well, I wanted to touch a number of people. And when you think about it, how many people can you see as a governor? you multiply it quite a bit if you can, every time you're in a studio with 25 or 30 people right there, and you can hit 20 more sets of 25 or 30 people, it makes sense.
But that's a much more limited focus. Think of Clinton's use of Larry King Live and of MTV and things in the last election to use that mass media.